You hear that? Your dog knows spring is coming sooner than you think. Dog walks, dog parks, playing fetch, all the stuff your dog loves to do with you. But the warmer weather also means that fleas and ticks are coming back. Fleas and ticks are in the grass, in the woods, and even on their dog friends. Fleas are an itchy nuisance, can easily get into your home, furniture, and beds, which can be terrible. Ticks are even worse. They're hard to spot, but can carry disease and get your dog really sick. PetMeds has your furry friend protected with the best products to prevent flea and ticks all year long. PetMeds pharmacists connect directly with your vet to save you time and deliver the best products for your pet. PetMeds offers low prices on all flea and tick meds, including NexGard, Simparica, and more. And PetMeds AutoShip helps you save even more with additional discounts on regular shipments of PetMeds, dog food, and other high-quality supplies. So get ready for all the spring fun now. Visit PetMeds.com and use promo code PODCAST to save 40% on your first auto ship order. That's PetMeds.com and promo code PODCAST.
I'm Kim Grenolds of Dogman.com with Chris Fetter, Scott Eklund. We haven't been able to do a podcast for a little bit, so we just thought we would do some catch-up, some cleanup, talk about some things that have happened over the past week, as well as some things coming up. But been busy with basketball not too long ago. We just found out on Twitter that the point guard from University of Washington, Elijah Hardy, has looked to transfer. He's in the transfer portal and looks like he's going to head to Portland State, which is probably a really good fit. I know a little bit about what's going on down there. Chris, do you know anything about what's going on down there at Portland State?
I don't. That's it was news to me that that would be the destination of choice, but I think that's happened before. I mean, and if he wants to stay in the region in the Northwest, seems good. He can drop down right now to that Big Sky level and play immediately. Doesn't have to worry about sitting out or anything like that. So I'm not sure exactly what the state of their program is in terms of, you know, need for a point guard, what have right. you, but I guarantee you they'll take a Pac-12 guard any day of the week and be just happy with it.
It'll be interesting down there. They lost their leading scorer. He's guard, and he headed back home to go to Arizona State. Terry Porter, the head coach, was under a lot of fire at the end of the year, and actually assistant coach Dave Rice on the Husky coaching staff was listed as a possible candidate to replace Terry Porter. So Elijah Hardy can go in there with them losing their top guy, and he can probably go in there, get a lot of minutes, and be the guy, which just wasn't going to happen here at University of Washington with Quad A Green in the way and Marcus Sahonis obviously in front of him. So good opportunity for Elijah Hardy. He's a kid that, you know, he's a good kid. So we'll see how much he can develop down there. But minutes is what he needs, and minutes is what he will get at Portland State. Also, university also released that Nate Pryor, I always want to call him Aaron Pryor. Nate Pryor and Eric Stevenson both are officially on the roster. Nate Pryor, I think there's still a little bit of work to be done with Nate on terms of getting cleared academically with the board at University of Washington. So some interesting stuff there. Eric Stevenson transferring from Wichita State from Timberline High School down in Lacey. But Chris and Scott, are you pretty much hearing that, you know, transfers this year with the coronavirus are going to be granted immediate eligibility just because of what's going on out there? Is that your sense?
From my standpoint, yes. I get the feeling that they're going to do everything they can to let these kids be able to transfer without penalty for this year. And it might even be a kind of a dry run / test run to kind of see how this works in the overall scheme of things for the future, because that it is something they're considering doing, in letting guys just transfer and not have a penalty.
Yeah, especially with what
I was going to say, Kim.
There.
I would add too that Jen Cohen told Dave Softy Mahler and Dick Fain when they were on when she was on KJR last week that they're expecting, you know, up to like 25, 26 seniors to come back, because the NCAA have given them the option of being able to come back, and Washington's actually going to pay their full need. And a lot of people, you know, they're, if they're baseball guys or if they're some, you know, if they're playing in certain sports, they're not getting full knee. They're usually not, they're only getting partial scholarships. So for Washington to step up and do that is pretty big. But I have a feeling that if they're going to already do that, which the NCAA has already said they're going to do that, then I would think that they're going to have to make some allowances for people, you know, for this fall and going ahead, because this thing's not going to go anywhere anytime soon.
And just to be clear, you're talking about the extra year of eligibility. That's for people who participate in spring sports. That's not basketball, that's men or women's, and it's not football. It's more for softball and the springtime sports. It'll be interesting to see how they handle that with roster management. They'll obviously have to expand how many scholarships are available because they will have incoming high school seniors. So something to keep an eye on. I mean, we could probably go round and round on that for hours, but I think it's one of those things that we're going to have to see just how it plays out, because Washington had a dominant, you know, top five, you know, softball team going into this year and was one of the favorites for the national championship. And if they can return everybody next year, for that, plus the incoming high school talent, which I know they've got a pretty good recruiting class coming in, Washington softball is definitely something to keep an eye on.
Well, why isn't the Washington State Legislature doing what Florida did and saying, well, we were one of the favorites to win the national title, so we're the national champions, like Florida State did with their basketball, their men's basketball team?
Not to get political, but that would be involved doing something. But
yeah.
Anyways, moving on to football.
Yesterday, I think they're a little busy right now with other things.
Yesterday and today we had a chance to talk to Coach Scott Huff, the offensive line coach at University of Washington, and also John Donovan, the new offensive coordinator. Let's start off first of all with our conversation that we had with Scott Huff. Some interesting revelations on some guys that he's going to try in different positions on the offensive line.
Well, I mean, obviously with Nick Harris gone, they were looking for some leadership there. We've been talking about the fact that Luke Wattenberg, who played left guard the past couple of years, was probably going to be the guy that they tabbed to move inside. And right now that's what it looks like. He's going to battle with a handful of guys, including Mateo Mele, Miles Mural, and possibly even Garen Hatchett. That was a little bit of a surprise for me, talking about Garen Hatchett moving possibly inside. He's a true freshman coming out of Ferndale. But, you know, those are kind of the guys at center. And then he talked about.
Hey, Scott, before you move off of the center, and I'll get right back to you, but when you take a look at Nick Harris, Nick was about 6 foot, maybe 6'1" in shoes. But the guys that they're talking about at center, like, they're all 6'5"-ish. They're bigger guys. Can you talk about that a little bit?
Yeah, well, Wattenberg's 6'4", 6'5". Mele's in that 6'5" range. So is Garen Hatchett. Just Scott Huff prefers his linemen to all be in the 6'5" range. But they have to be able to move. They have to be able to bend, all those things. He'll take a guy shorter and work with him. But if he's looking at if all things are equal – and he's got a chance at bringing in a guy who's 6'2 or a guy who's 6'5, 6'6. He's always going to opt on the bigger, longer guy. And that's – I just think that's – I mean, if you look at who he's recruited over the past couple of years, Miles Mural, Vic Kern, those are two of the outliers for him. Typically, Scott Huff is wanting to go 6'4 or higher and more likely 6'5 and longer for his guys.
He talked about left tackle. I think the biggest thing, talked about this before, but I don't think he talked to anybody or anybody had talked about it in public, but Jack Kirkland moving from right guard over to left tackle.
Oh, yeah. We talked about it in our spring preview article on offensive linemen, that the word was that he was headed over to left tackle. And that was a bit of a surprise for me. Not that I don't think Jackson Kirkland could do it, but I thought they wanted to bring up a younger guy and maybe even have Mateo Mele out there. At this point, it doesn't even sound like Mele will even be in the mix at left tackle. It sounds like it's going to be Nate Kaleppo, Julius Bulow, Vic Kern, and Kirkland battling it out. And then whoever doesn't work out, you know, maybe they'll slide him over to right tackle. I think right now, if the season were to start today, it would probably be Jackson Kirkland as your starter at left tackle and Vic Kern as your starter at right tackle. But luckily, we've got some time to decide on that. One thing I will say is that it sounds like Kaleppo and Bulo have both had outstanding off seasons. And Corey Luciano is also another one that's in the mix there at tackle, which surprised me a little bit. I thought he was probably a better fit inside at center or guard. But, you know, Scott Huff is the one who gets paid to do this, and that's where he wants to see his guys play, and that's where they're going to be playing.
Let's start at left tackle and project there. Would you project that Jackson Kirkland starter at left tackle?
Yeah, Jackson Kirkland at left tackle. I think Mateo Mele is probably your left guard, although I think there will be a battle there, possibly even with a guy like Nate Kaleppo, who I think could play inside or outside. I think Luke Wattenberg's your starting center against – let's just assume the Michigan game happens on Labor Day weekend. I think against Michigan, I think Luke Wattenberg's your center. I think Henry Bainuvalu, barring an injury, is probably your right guard. And then your right tackle is probably Vic Kern. But I've heard Julius Bulo is a guy who the coaches really, really like a lot. And if he became the starter at right tackle, it wouldn't surprise me if they moved either Bainuvalu to left guard and slid in Kern at right guard, or left Bainuvalu at right guard and moved Kern to left guard. So I think Washington's got some nice versatility and depth along the offensive line, and that's something Scott Huff brought up, that he has versatile guys, and that's what he really wants.
Hey, Scott, Vic Kern, I always thought of him more of a guard. I always thought of Bainuvalu as more of a tackle. Are those guys guards, tackle? Can they play both? What's your thought on that?
Well, if you watch the way Kern and Bainuvalu played in the Boise game, the Las Vegas Bowl, both of those guys came in and played right guard and right tackle, and they were just destroying guys. They were playing really, really well. Kern does not fit the typical body that you want out there at tackle. He's maybe 6'3 and a half, probably closer to 6'2, 6'3, and he's right around 300 pounds, but he can really move. He's got long arms, and he's always played out on the edge, so I think that gave him some advantage. With Bainuvalu, he always played tackle in high school, but they moved him inside once he got to the University of Washington, and the coaches really, really like what he brings to the table. After Jackson Kirkland got hurt in the Colorado game, Bainuvalu came in, had a really good game against Colorado, had another really good game against Washington State, and then followed that up with probably his best game of the year against Boise State. So I think the coach is just really excited about those guys at right tackle and right guard, even though it, from a body standpoint or what you're typically looking for at each of those positions, reversing them would seem like the right deal, but the way those guys play and the mentality they play with, I think Coach Huff likes them. Bainuvalu at guard and Kern at tackle.
And a couple of other guys that you know, haven't been mentioned much, but boy, I think they're going to be battling, and that's MJ out of Tacoma, and also I know that they love Troy Fautanu.
Did I say Mele or Ale at left guard when I gave my offensive line?
Well, you said Mele.
Okay, well, I meant Ale. Sorry about that. I meant Ale as the starter at left guard. I think Mele will be your backup at center this year. But and Huff even said he didn't see Mele playing inside a guard. He thought he was either a tackle or a center. Who was the other one you asked me about?
Troy Fautanu, who redshirted last year. I know that they love him.
Yeah, he was a guy that Scott Huff really didn't mention in the talk, and I don't think it's for any other reason than he just – how many guys does he have? Like 16 guys he has to go through, so it's easy to leave out a name here or there. But, yeah, I think Fautanu is a guy who could also battle, and honestly, from a technical standpoint, he might even be ahead of MJ Ale, but we've seen what MJ Ale can do when the light switch goes on for him, because he can just be a devastating run blocker. And I really am excited to see what that guy can do once he really gets his feet wet with some reps. And at this point, I'd say Ale is probably your left guard, but I think Fautanu will be right there as well.
Hey, Chris, when you take a look at who the guys we've talked about on the offensive line, the thing that really jumps out, they're big. I mean, they are big, you know, and is this a result of that Alabama game, you know, a few years ago where they wanted to get bigger? Because you take a look at this offensive line, they're definitely huge.
Well, if, I mean, if you go and you, if you go by what Scott just mentioned, if you look at Jackson Kirkland at 6'7", 325, whatever, at left tackle, then you look at MJ Ale at 6'6", 350, 360 at left guard, and then at center you go Wattenberg. He's a legitimate 6'5", 300+. And then at right guard, if you go Henry Bainavalu, he's 6'5", 6'6", 320+. And then at right tackle, if you go Vic Kern, yeah, he's 6'3", 310, 315. But then you also, you know, Scott mentioned Julius Bulow, who had supposedly had a really good offseason. That's a guy who's 6'8", 340. So, yeah, I mean, you just...
And Kaleppo?
Well, right. And if Nate Kaleppo is your backup left tackle, you know, he's 6'5", 6'6", 340 plus. So yeah, they're getting big. There's no doubt about it. They've gotten very big, and then I think that the future, especially of the guys that they recruited, now you got Miles Morrow, who's 6'2", probably 310, 315. That's probably what he's going to be throughout his career. But if you look like Garen Hatchett, if you look at some of these other kids, Roger Rosengarten, and some of these other guys, you know, they have the potential to really grow. I mean, a guy like Rosengarten, I saw him at the Polynesian Bowl. And he's 6'5", 6'6", legitimately 6'6", and, you know, probably close to 300 pounds, but he could get 320, 325 without even breaking a sweat. So there's a lot of potential in the future as well.
I'm showing my age, but I just remember when I was a kid growing up watching football and 300-pound linemen. There wasn't many of them. That was huge back in the day, and seems like the minimum now to play offensive line. They just grow them differently these days, I guess.
Paramount Plus and the National Park Foundation present A Mountain of Zen. This Earth Week, you can live stream 7 national parks for 7 days on Paramount Plus. Paramount Plus, official streaming partner of the National Park Foundation.
Chris, we had a chance today to talk to John Donovan, the new offensive coordinator. Anything jump out to you about John?
Yeah, a few things. I mean, I thought it was interesting that, you know, he did say that the opportunity to come coach at Washington was kind of a random thing for him. It obviously wasn't something that he was actively looking for. And because of the network of NFL contacts that Jimmy Lake had created, he found out about Donovan, and it looked like a good fit there. He talked about his background being from New Jersey and how he didn't know much about college football on the West Coast growing up, what have you. But he does remember the Washington teams back then being really tough and being hard-nosed teams. And even when he was coaching at Vanderbilt and Penn State, they still had kind of that tough, hard-nosed mentality. And that's something that he obviously wants to continue to do here. It's built on that kind of physical nature. And that's something that obviously Jimmy Lake wants. And John Donovan's right on board with that. I did find it interesting that he really didn't do an autopsy or a deep dive of last year's offense to kind of figure out what they needed to do when putting together a philosophy, an offensive philosophy for this year. It sounds like he just kind of came in and had his ideas, and they kind of used that whole part whole teaching method where he just kind of threw it out there to the assistant coaches, and then the coaches then kind of said, okay, well, this is what we did last year. This is kind of how we approach things. This is kind of how the players are. And so then that's when he started to take a look at some film and started to figure out and kind of tinker a little bit with it. And then now they're back to, you know, once he got the feedback from the assistant coach, the other offensive coaches, put it back together and kind of said, okay, this is what we like. This is based on what I put together. This is also based on their feedback. And now we're going to start installing this stuff. So that's kind of where they're at now, and that's where they're doing all their Zoom meetings and all that kind of other stuff. But he sounds energized. He's back into the recruiting swing of things, which is something obviously is new for him again after coaching for a number of years with Jacksonville. And but it sounds like he's got a plan in place. And obviously they'd want to be out there coaching those guys right now because most of those guys learn by doing at that age. But he did say that the one thing the NFL does have over college guys is that they have all the time in the world to teach details and teach the fundamentals and have 2-3 hour long meetings if they need to coach certain things. And that's what they're doing here. So this is, he's got an opportunity to use this time to kind of bring that NFL experience to bear. And it sounds like they're working on it so far, but we'll see what happens. But it was good talking to him. This is the first time the media has gotten a chance to talk to him. So,
and what I sensed was just a lot of frustration. He's just stuck in the office and they're not doing football. He doesn't know what he's got. And boy, if he could just go out right now with his guys, I mean, I think he would love it. But I sense some frustration in his voice that he just wants to get started. And I'm sure he's not the only one. But, you know, it'll be interesting to see what happens. But that's what I sensed with him. Like, okay, you know, you can watch the film, you can do things and talk to guys. But, you know, he just sounded like he's just ready to go with football.
Oh, yeah. None of this is ideal. And you got to remember, too, he's in a new situation, and usually, you know, if you're in a new situation, and he only knew Coach Cato, Durham Cato, the new tight ends coach, he only knew him from back in Vanderbilt, so it was good to have a familiar face, but that was the only coach that he really knew coming into Seattle, and so you gotta understand his situation. He kind of feels like, well, I'm going to get acclimated by coaching, right? I'm going to get acclimated by getting into this thing, getting with my guys, getting out on the field, doing my thing. And now he can't do any of that. So I can imagine, yeah, I'm sure the cabin fever is strong with a guy like John Donovan right now, because this is what he was brought in to do.
Well, he's also behind the eight ball because he doesn't know these guys. He's never worked with them. You know, so, yeah, sometimes you just want to get going. So hopefully we'll get that soon. And NFL draft coming up next week. Are we going to have a guy drafted in the first round, you guys?
Well, I think
it's interesting. I don't see it happening.
Yeah, I think it's interesting. It's, you know, I did, hopefully people got a chance to listen to the interview I did with Rob Rang. And Rob Rang has Jacob Eason as a first round talent. He has him like in his top 32 in terms of guys that are available, but at the same time, I don't see it either, to be honest. I think a lot of the mock drafts that I saw, the earliest that Eason would be taken is around the mid 40s in the second round with like Indianapolis, for instance. I think, you know, he'd learn for a year, under Philip Rivers. And then, you know, depending on what happens with Rivers, you go do your thing and whatnot. But it does feel like a lot of the mock draft guys out there, at least the guys that you would pay attention to, think that Eason's going to get picked up by an Indianapolis or a Tampa Bay. You know, you learn under Tom Brady and then you go. So it sounds like they're thinking a team that wants to maybe groom him for a year or two might be his best landing spot.
And what I've heard is, you know, and we see this every year, you know, because a lot of the guys that are doing the mock drafts from ESPN, CBS, you know, all of the big major networks and all the guys that are well known, they're not just relying on what they're seeing, they're relying on what they're hearing. And there's a lot of information that gets floated out there in drafts. Guys will, you know, just say things, you know, for example, the Jacob Eason interview didn't well. And there's a lot of stuff that gets floated out there on purpose by agents, by general managers. So there's a lot of gamesmanship in that. Prevailing thing is Jordan Love is a guy that seems to have shot up the boards on the NFL draft, the quarterback out of Utah State. Is that a smokescreen? Because you're not hearing a lot about Jacob Eason. What I've heard is there's a lot of teams out there that like Jacob Eason, but the one I've heard that really likes him is Indianapolis. Indianapolis got Philip Rivers from San Diego, and they'd like to take him in the second round because they traded their first round pick away. But Indianapolis is in win now mode. So, you know, they can't really afford to take a quarterback. And when you're in win now mode and sit him, they need a draft choice to be able to come in and play.
If you want to win your fantasy football league, it starts right now. The offseason is the best time to get ahead of the competition. We'll help you win your league on the Fantasy Football Today podcast, part of CBS Sports Podcast Network. Fantasy Football Today has 3 episodes every week following the latest news, giving you early rankings, early sleepers, breakouts, and busts, So if you're a dedicated fantasy football manager, check out the most dedicated podcast, Fantasy Football Today. Download and follow on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and anywhere podcasts are found.